Hello and welcome to another edition of the pod of cricket podcast, where usually five, but today four people are around the microphone talking cricket. So I'm joined by Clive. Hi, Clive.
Hey, Tariq.
And one of our regulars, I think Srinath hasn't missed any of the podcasts. Hi, Srinath.
Hi, Tariq. Yeah.
And we have back again Vinayak. Hi, Vinayak. Welcome back.
Hey, guys. Yes, I did miss the last one. And it's Srinath's turn next again.
Because as of now, today we are missing Sameer, unfortunately, but hopefully he'll be back with us in the next podcast. In fact, this podcast has taken so much time to put together because you might as well call this podcast Harry Potter and the Cursed Pod, because there has been some jinx or the other. But finally, here we are, or at least 80% of us on the podcast. For the latest episode. And gentlemen, we shall begin the latest episode with a quick recap of the cricket action gone past, or more specifically, the India versus Sri Lanka series. But like Vinayak asked me to mention, that we should be spending less time on this series than some of the Sri Lankan batsmen did out there in the middle during the ODIs.
It's only fair.
Okay, so quick assessment. I mean, the result, even maybe the margin, was never in doubt, but anybody was surprised by anything in this series at all?
I guess I'll start. I honestly didn't expect a 9-0. We did predict, most of us did predict the test series was going to be a whitewash. But the ODIs especially was quite amazing, in fact, considering Sri Lanka's decent recent record against India. I mean, they did defeat us in the Champions Trophy not too long ago. And I mean, I thought they'd at least show up during the ODI. And except that brief spell where Akila Dhananjaya was pulling off an Ajanta Mendes, I don't think it was even competitive, which is sad for not just the fans and the people and the players who are, you know, hoping for a competitive series. It was disappointing for us who are, you know, responsible for writing and covering and tweeting and all that. It felt like a punishment for most part of it. And I think that's how most fans would have felt as well.
Sri Lanka actually failed to show up at all. Like, it looked like India wanted to dominate from ball one, and that's what they did. The whole series, they had nothing there. India, except for that brief period when I talk about where Dhananjaya went all Ajanta Mendes on us, there was no other point in this whole tour where I saw India, Sri Lanka compete. And it was really sad actually to see like a side where, a country actually where we, you know, used to go and it would be really hard for us to tour. It was so disappointing to see that there was no fight at all.
Srinath, were you surprised at all at the fact that, I mean, Sri Lanka had lost to Zimbabwe before this, so it's not as if they were coming in with great ODI form on home soil. Plus, the injuries and all that seemed to plug them. They had worse jinx and luck than this latest episode of the podcast being put together, I think. So, what would you take away as a Sri Lankan fan or a cricketer from this? I mean, how do you brush this aside?
I think what's been surprising is what's happened after the series, which is that now the SLC is finally going to turn to Jayawardene and probably Sangakkara once he hangs up his boots, which is really surprising because these are the very people they've alienated over the last couple of years. Aravinda De Silva is set to come back, I think, as per some news reports which have been carried by various publications in the last 2-3 days. The very fact that SLC, as autocratic and as all-controlling as it is turning to the very people who can make a difference, I think that is probably a positive if it actually ends up happening. But otherwise, I think it was, I mean, once that told us the whole story, I think at one point Kapu Gedra was captaining and he was playing around, he's played, what, 9,500 ODIs and he averages about 21 with the bat. And the SLC press release officially said that Kapu Gedra is the captain of the Sri Lankan side. I think they called him the Kandy superstar or the Kandy line or something like that. And they said that Kapu Gedra is captain of the side because he's among the few who can hold his place. That itself said everything that needs to be said about Sri Lankan cricket at this point of time.
Or the PR firm they have hired to write the press releases.
Yeah. I'd like to add one thing to what Srinath said. I think another take positive from that Sri Lanka series for Sri Lanka was Andrew Fernando. The guy did some great work in terms of capturing the mood putting into words the mess that is Sri Lankan cricket right now. It was painful to read at some points, but it was great writing. So I think, yeah, if you're stretching, I could call that a positive for Sri Lanka, but barely.
We are clutching at straws, but then we take out something out of the series, which, I mean, you cannot blame India for being ruthless here. You cannot blame India for, well, essentially kicking them in the teeth when they were down, because it's a question of professionalism, and India had a point to prove, especially after what had happened in West Indies. I'm guessing it probably was high up their agenda to finish it 9-0 and to make a statement, because otherwise what else can you do? You win the series, it's not statement enough.
That's very true, actually. Just to add to what you said, Virat Kohli's post-match presentation, was the first thing he talked about was that. How, you know, despite the team being in good form, even in the recent past, they've not been able to put together a run of, you know, 2-3 consecutive wins in ODI. As good as the team has been in tests, the ODI form has been patchy at best. And I think in that sense, it's a very good sign. I mean, in the past, we have played weaker teams. We have played, in fact, weak Sri Lankan teams on Indian soil and not being able to clean sweep the series. It's happened before. So the fact that they did that is credit to the Indian team and the professionalism that they showed. Despite doing all those experiments, they did come out 9-0, and that speaks a lot about what Kohli wants from this team and where this team is headed. So I think that's a good point that you
brought. Actually, yeah, that's a very good point. You know, despite all the experiments which we changed our batting order a lot, our bowling as well. Despite that, we finished 9-0, so, which is like, you know, a great statement to our bench strength. Like, you know, it shows like we have players who can easily fill in the roles required. So that was the one of the greatest, you know, takeaways I could see for the Indian side. Other than the fact that, you know, we fought our way through some situations like in that second ODI, but the experimentation and them all working well, except the batting order, the fourth, the number four spot, everything else, I think went well for India experiment wise.
All right, and interesting that you bring up the experiments, because I think that gives us a smooth segue into the next segment, where we want to talk about India's upcoming series against Australia, which is the immediate focus. In terms of the selection policy, the rotation, the squad, your first impressions about how you see this series playing out?
Okay, so I'll go here. So yeah, what I really like was that, you know, okay, we have still not selected Ashwin and Jadeja. And I think that's the right way to go, because let's not change the fact that, you know, that they're not working well for ODIs. They were struggling in the Champions Trophy. They were struggling against England as well. And basically, Jadeja and Ashwin have not been able to create the same impact in ODIs as what they have done in Test cricket. So it is not surprising that, you know, India is looking for alternatives. And the fact that the alternatives, that is Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav, who both are wrist spinners, are doing well, is showing that, you know, India has options as well. And you don't need to rely completely on Ashwin and Jadeja. So that's the really big positive I see from the selection. And also the other selections of bringing back our pacers was very well expected, I guess. So that's about it. But the biggest positive was, you know, still resting Ashwin and Jadeja, if you could call it resting as well. I would like to, you know, for MK Prasad to just come on and say that we have dropped them or whatever.
That is probably the biggest takeaway from the squad selection point of view. I was quite surprised pleasantly surprised to see Ashwin and Jadeja not be in the mix for the squad. The one thing that did bug me was the line that the selectors took, saying, you know, they are still being rested. instead of, you know, the one, I think we mentioned this in one of the earlier podcasts as well about the current selector panel being a little open and honest about things. Because I genuinely think Ashwin and Jadeja are, you know, Ashwin more than Jadeja has to be a red ball bowler. It'd be nice if the selectors had come out and said, instead of, you know, saying they're a drop, saying that, you know, their white ball form needs to be looked at, they need to improve, and, you know, make it clear that it was not just about them getting rest, because they have been rested.
They just graduated to say that these guys have been rotated out. So
yeah.
It's just, jargon-wise, there's evolution.
Yeah, exactly. Rotated out, yeah, okay.
Calling it a rotation policy, they're sort of bringing that idea in.
I can understand from a player management point of view why they would say that, but it would, like, given that the current selection regime has been open and honest about most of the stuff that has gone on in behind the selection of the squad, it would be nice to, you know, for someone to come out and say, right, their numbers have not been good in with white ball. These are the areas that they need to work on. So I guess we'll find out in due course, but I do hope that, you know, it's a beginning of a phase where we have two wrist spinners in the squad, even if not in the playing 11. And having Ashwin and Jadeja just completely negates that opportunity. I mean, we need to have wrist spinners. That is the way everyone is going in ODI and T20s. And that is something that the team management has to completely consider on their road to, you know, selecting squad for the World Cup.
Yeah, even in England are experimenting with these spinners these days. So
yeah,
sure, you
about that.
You know, there was this really nice interview about Ashwin had on Click Info with George Dobell saying, I think Srinath will know better about this, where he was discussing about the industry standards. Where he was talking about, you know, like how he's performing way below the industry standards. And I felt that really weird one, because that's jargon not used for cricket. It's more like business talk. And he still came out and said industry standards. And I was like, man, like, you're a cricketer, behave like a cricketer.
That's Ashwin.
Okay, and looking at this particular series, I mean, let's look at the other team also, which is Australia, who are coming into the series having just won their second test match in the subcontinent this year. And I put this stat into perspective because since 2010, they've only won about three. So two of them are this year. But nonetheless, this is a different format. This is a format they have been comfortable in playing in the subcontinent. So how do you assess the Australian squad and their chances?
I think it's fair to call them favourites, Arik. I mean, every single time they come, they put up a great fight. I mean, even if they've not won the series, I think even the last series went to the seventh game. The seven-match ODI series with two no results, and India won it only the final game in, I think it was in Bangalore, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. So Australia, as an ODI side, each one of their top six plays the IPL. They know the conditions really well. They know their opponents well. They are all genuine hitters. They all have match-changing abilities. India's bowling has been good. India's spinners, both the newbies, they've not played against Australia. The rest spinners, I mean, Akshar Patel, I think, has played a couple of games. So, on the whole, the Indian bowling versus Australian batting still looks a little shaky for India, because Bhuvneshwar and Bumrah, for all their success, they've not really been able to be consistent in these crunch games. I mean, even if it's against the top side, when somebody's going against them or going after their bowling, these guys have had a bit of a difficult time in the past. So I think for them, it's a great test for the Indian bowling. India have been brilliant, but I think the Sri Lanka tour itself is not any indication that they'll be able to beat Australia over a five-match series. I think on balance, Australia probably go into it as marginal favourites.
So you were sort of taking the Michael Clarke view here, because he also mentioned Australia as favourites, giving them the edge 3-2 over the series. But Vinayak and Clive, any other thoughts or any contrarian takes on what she...
I mean, it's actually quite interesting to assess who's the favourite in terms of the upcoming five-match series, because I've long maintained that India have problems in the ODI setup. I mean, T20 setup more than ODIs, but India still have problems in the ODI setup. There are a lot of question marks that have been kind of brushed over in this final win against Sri Lanka. And it's like we saw in the final in Champions Trophy, the moment the opponent batsman start attacking the bowlers, we often end up without any solutions. And he mentioned Jaspreet and Bhuvneshwar. I think a lot of focus is going to be on Hardik Pandya's bowling in this series. A lot has been said about how he is the solution to the all-rounder pot. And I think his bowling in the limited overs is still a big question mark. His inability to bowl 10 overs could be a factor in a tight match, right? I mean, you can only go to Kedar Jadhav so many times. And someone like Kedar, not done that well, given the chances with the bat, cannot be in the team as the sixth bowler. And there are other batsmen waiting out there who are better equipped to, you know, fill up the top six in the Indian lineup. So I think that is going to be a mark whether Hardik Pandya can bowl 10, stand up and be countered when, you know, this is probably the toughest series they're going to play in terms of the ODIs in the near future. The New Zealand series is next, and then there's Sri Lanka. And I just don't think that's a challenge for this Indian team. And in terms of knowing where they actually stand, I think this is a very, very crucial series for India.
I think if they're at all serious about him and about the 2019 World Cup, I think they should play Kuldeep all five games. Because the one big difference between him and the rest of the attack is that when faced with an aggressive onslaught from the batsman, he thinks, he doesn't flinch, he's still unafraid to fly the ball, and most of the time he ends up succeeding. So, and he's just, I think, still 22, right?
Given that there is less than 2 years left for the World Cup, do you think this is the series which is the best test for India in terms of actually finding out their, I would not call the best 11, but at least that the ideal scenario under which they should be competing in the 2019 World Cup in terms of experimentation, in terms of finding who gets what slot?
Given what we know, I think this is the toughest series we have, at least in the World Cup, of what we know. But we have a South Africa series for certain and an England series for certain. But the England series is a three-match series, so there's nothing you can learn much from a three-match series. Maybe a five-match series, you still have a chance. You know, you can experiment a bit here and there. But three-match series is too less, you know, to find out where you stand as a team in, against anyone. And this series, given that how strong this Australian side is, let's not forget they are world champions as well. So this Australian side is really strong, led by a really good captain. And they have some really good middle-order players. So, and to not to forget, they have IPL experience. Most of these players have IPL experience as well. So you can't count them out. They will be challenging India in India. So it will be interesting to see how Kohli adapts to the situation, because West Indies was an easy series. Sri Lanka was an easy series. But you will be facing attack, because like England, you will be getting attacked by Australia. You will be playing the best brand of cricket. So I would like to see how India face that eventually, because that will show us, you know, where we stand with the teams in the world.
And eventually, people, we are at that dreaded moment, prediction time. Who's leading India, who's leading Australia, and who has what predictions for the series?
Yeah, I'll go 3-2 Australia, I guess. Exactly what I'm saying, so stick to that.
I think I'm going to go 3-2 Australia as well, actually, this time. Not a copy scene, but I think that's probably how it's going to end up, because, like I said, you know, India's ODI setup does have issues, and I think it's going to get shown up, especially the middle-order batting. But let's see. Australia's bowling lineup is not the strongest, so you might have Manish Pandey and Kedar Jadhav hitting some form, but I have a feeling it's going to be 3-2 Australia as well.
All right, and Clive?
I don't know. I feel 3-2 India, with Kohli winning us with one special innings. again as usual. Actually one of the top three winning us a game with the special innings. Just like the Jaipur game, if you guys remember the last time.
Mm-hmm.
The 359 barrier which we broke.
The massive chase, yeah.
And if that's the case, so you're going with 3-2 India.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
So everybody seems to be favoring a very, very tight margin, which is understandable given how little the gap between the two teams is. But I'm going to stick my neck out and say, if India do not catch a lucky break or two, it might even be 4-1 Australia. Because you never know in these matches, one or two turns of luck could be crucial. So let's see. I will be at the pessimistic end of the spectrum here.
Whoa, so it's only Clive predicting India, no? That's interesting. bunch of anti-nationalists.
Yeah, just one retweet from Dennis guaranteed.
Speaking of getting retweets from Dennis, we come to what purportedly is one of his favorite topics, which is the IPL. So, favorites in air quotes, you'd not see them on this voice call, but I mean... But nonetheless, we come to the final segment of our podcast this week, and it's the DRS or the delayed rant segment. It's been quite a while since the IPL media rights were announced, or rather the winners of the bid for the IPL media rights were announced. And I think pretty much everybody listening to us and of course all of us on the podcast know what happened next. With a close to 17,000 crore rupees bid for rights, everything has gone into the kitty of Star, who now own the rights for the next 5 years. Overall, your reaction in terms of what Harsha Gogla made a big point the moment the rights were announced, saying that the money following IPL is a huge vote in terms of saying that it is club cricket or franchise cricket over bilateral series and international cricket involving countries, much like the football model faces in terms of club versus country. So where do you stand on that after you heard the news about the award of the IPL rights? Or the media rights.
I think Bogle is spot on with what he's saying. I mean, in the sense that if it's bringing money, let it bring money. And I think we've seen this in football, it's happening already, which is that at the end of the day, the national boards or the national associations are the ones that make the money. It's not like the money is going out of the game. And if that's the way to fund international cricket going forward, so be it. I mean, how does it matter how international cricket is funded? Today, Test cricket pretty much runs on the money that T20 is bringing to the game. So, without calling for the death or writing of obituaries of any particular format, I mean, if the economics is shifting towards the shortest format as we're seeing around the globe, so be it. I mean, I don't think it's such a drastic or a big deal, but it does say a lot about where the money will continue to come from for cricket in the years to come.
And one thing to add to what Shina said, if this means, hopefully Test cricket continues to, you know, make use of the money that's generated from other formats. But if this is an indication that, you know, the era of bilateral series without context is coming to an end, then I think it's not a bad thing, so to speak. I mean, T20 cricket has been the biggest crowd puller and money puller over the past few years. That has been evident for a while now. But in terms of whether this means the end of international cricket, I would say hopefully not, but I hope it's the end of meaningless bilateral series. You know, unless we come up with a context to playing bilateral series in terms of some kind of an ODI championship that's been mooted around for a while. I mean, no one is clear with actually where that is all going. But in terms of not having any more bilateral series, that is where we are heading towards. While preserving Test cricket, then I think it's not a bad thing.
And Clive, where do you stand?
I actually have nothing to add to what Srinath and Vinayaka said. I completely agree with both of them. I just hope that, you know, this money doesn't mean that, you know, that we shift our focus, because at the end of the day, it's a product which people want. And the way Star Sports have put money, it looks like, you know, they feel IPL is a much more attractive product than international cricket. And you will completely understand why you would think that, because IPL context, it's a competition, two months a year, okay, you get everything done and dusted, you know, it's every game matters over there. While international cricket with India, some games don't matter at all. In fact, some games people don't even bother watching. Like the India-England series, yes, it was a clash of two titans, but then there was nothing, there was no connection to what was, how important the series was for either side. So, you know, that's the only hope, you know, like, if this means the end of contextless bilateral series, then I'm well and happy about it. But it's time, it's actually a wake-up call to ICC and everyone else, you know, that T20 leagues are becoming attractive, okay, attractive product, and it's time that ODIs also step up and, you know, and make themselves count in this big picture of cricket. Otherwise, they are losing out to T20 leagues.
Okay, and just to add to that, the other concern that sort of comes up from the size of this deal and the rate at which the numbers have inflated, because this deal is more than double of the original 10-year broadcast deal that was signed with Sony, which sort of shows the growing popularity, but also shows that maybe the market might be sort of heating up a little too fast, because there has already been talk of how the viewership numbers may not be growing at the kind of rapid pace they are assuming, and maybe cricket is a sport that is not the fast growing sport of the 90s or 2000s. I'm talking about subcontinent, specifically Indian audiences, which could be a matter of concern. Matter of concern number two, which is purely economics based, which is the concern that all the power concentrated into Star's hands with the international rights for India cricket in India and IPL. So do you see a future where Star starts letting the international rights go?
And all ICC tournaments on top of that.
And all ICC tournaments, yes.
So wait.
Tariq, no. Let's just stop. No. Tariq, that's not a question. That's an answer for you. I would want you to go ahead and answer your own question.
Yes, I don't know why the economist is asking us about economics.
Exactly.
Okay, so now that you've decisively thrown it back into my court. So from a financial point of view, it probably might make sense for them to start, depending on how valuable those properties are. And one of the interesting trends I'd want to see, although I don't have numbers off the top of my head or have not really checked, is how much would a possible scarcity of international cricket, if, like you guys are saying, it could be a step back in terms of scrapping some of these surplus bilateral series, to use kind words, if we take them out of the calendar and free up the calendar and make actual international cricket a little more scarce, again in terms of economics, could it become a little more valuable and actually get advertisers and viewers back to vote with their dollars or rupees or euros or pounds there. So that would probably be the interesting development to watch. I would think Star would start sort of trimming its portfolio, because it seems very keen on this all eggs in one basket strategy. I'm not extremely fond of the strategy or very gung-ho about it, but I would still think one of the things they will do is strip those rights away and put all their might behind the IPL, which is the most worrisome thing here.
No, I just have a question here. The thing is that, so Star eventually went ahead and ticked that global bid box. I mean, just to not get too technical, there were two parts to the whole IPL bidding thing, which is that you can bid for chunks, which are individual chunks. You can bid for TV in India, digital in India, etc., etc. There's six different chunks. Or you could just go ahead and take a global bid, which is to say that winner takes all. So Star came out and openly said that they were prepared to lose the IPL by just going that much more into the global bid. If the global bid, for example, was slightly lesser, Star admittedly were prepared to lose the IPL. which says a lot. I mean, which kind of counters everything we've been talking about, which is the fact that leagues are now everything, everybody's prepared to put in money. Everybody is prepared to put in money, but was Star so keen that there's a theory that they're amassing all the leagues? They have a Kabaddi league, they have a badminton league. I mean, they're getting into the whole league thing instead of or apart from the international thing. So there is a theory that Star were prepared to let go of this, and they don't see this as any different from international cricket. So I think any concerns of the primacy of international going away because Star bid $2.5 billion, I think it's a little bit of an overstatement, because they themselves have come out and said this. I mean, they didn't say it after acquiring the rights, but I don't know if that takes anything away from that.
But so good that you bring this point up, because this has been very fascinating. This is something Vinayak and I have discussed as well. I think Vinayak wrote about this also. About the fact that this whole calculation of how close those margins were, that if Star's global bid wasn't the highest, then they would neither have the television rights nor the digital rights, because their individual bids for those would not have been high enough for them to get any of those rights. So if they had been sort of split up. So you are right that we do not know their entire working behind it, whether they're extremely shrewd about precisely calculating and just about overshooting to win the bid, or whether this was a question of throwing money and seeing if it stuck, and it did, and now they are...
Yeah, and I don't know what the theoretical economic background on this is, but Star's bids on the individual categories were also abysmally low, because the more Star bid, the more the cumulative bid was rising, so that their own global bid would get defeated by themselves, right? Which is very interesting.
Yeah. That would have made for quite a... Just one thing to add to what Sreenath said. You're talking about it in terms of a Star perspective, right? So let's assume that Star didn't actually end up getting a bid and it went to the individual highest bidders. The number is still 15,800 crores. That doesn't take away from the fact that huge money would have been pumped into IPL anyway, right? I mean, it was a decision by Star to go either all or nothing. But by Star getting it, or either of the other players getting it, the number would have been the same. It's just a 500 crore difference. So the fact that the money is heading towards T20 cricket and not international cricket, I think would have stayed true irrespective of whether who got the bid or not, going by the final numbers.
And to add to Sreenath's point, or rather to address Sreenath's point about economic theory, I do not want to get into technical economic theory, particularly because I'm not very familiar with the field that is auctions and sealed bids. But it was mostly a case of very basic game theoretic calculation from Star. I think they wanted only either to get the global bid and were probably strategically willing to sacrifice individual bids because of that. I don't know if they have a strategy behind it. I don't know if they are going to go ahead and resell some of those rights.
They will. I mean, that's pretty much one of the biggest bets in terms of, like, the US market, for example, TV, they will have to resell. I mean, it's...
Yeah, even the Middle East market.
Yeah, Middle East as well, yeah.
Because I don't think Star has a channel here as well. So they're definitely reselling it to OSN or BN Sports, one of these people. And then... the best part about it all is that, you know, finally Australia gets to see IPL.
Oh, yeah? That's nice.
Because that means it might come on Fox Sports, which is owned by Murdoch. And I think Star Sports is also owned by Murdoch. So,
yeah.
For the first time, you know, after like 5 years, I think there might be IPL on TVs over there.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, but...
yeah, so one last thing on the whole auction bit and the media rights. There was this brilliant stat on the BCCI's annual report, which said that the Hotstar in 2016 had 1.5 times the viewership that TV had in India, which is a phenomenal number. And the point here to make is that TV measurements is still not accurate, and digital is probably giving you a far more accurate, granular understanding of the viewership. The point here to be made is that if you're getting 1.5 times the viewership on digital, the medium itself offers you a lot more opportunities to segment and make your ad revenues accordingly. If you're going to spread it across locations, Star, for example, are already some way into doing this, which is by saying that they have four different regional language streams, which means they're going to sell ads in specific languages for those digital properties. And these are going to be big, big draws because the telecast and everything is tailored into that vernacular language. And if you just extend it, they're not even... done this, they've done all of this before they got the rights for the IPL, so who knows what boundaries and what limits they have to this, because if you expand it to 10, 12 languages, for Euro 2016, if I remember, Sony Max had a Bengali stream with Bengali commentary, and if channels are willing to do that for a football tournament, I mean, nobody knows what limits there are to the whole IPL thing.
And famously, it had a Tamil one also, Shinar.
Yep.
They have a Tamil channel now, Tarkov. So. And the one point that, you know, that we did briefly mention, and I think that has been my biggest concern throughout this whole process, is the monopoly of Star. I mean, we Tariq mentioned that briefly, but I do wonder what it means for other sport, because this is purely from as a fan. I mean, it's not as a journalist or as a analyst or whatever. You know, every time you tune into Star Sports, what you see is, you know, highlights of past tournaments of India, and, you know, they show India, New Zealand, India, Australia, and all that, India, South Africa, and all that. Even when that's not their biggest draw, even when they have so many other events to show. And with IPL, you don't know what's going to happen to all the other sports that they have rights to. I'm genuinely worried about that. Unless they start offloading some of the international events that they hold rights to, badminton and, you know, Premier League, I don't see how they can do justice to having all of these events on their roster.
Okay, and just to add to Srinath's point, although Srinath did not use the economics terminology, what he's talking about is bundling, unbundling. So Star has bought the bunch of the rights and it has the technology, the reach and the platforms to then split them into their individual parts and basically sell them for more than the sum of the total that they originally paid. So that might be their strategy. But Vinayak's concern is a valid one. Any quick last rejoinders from Clive and Srinath on that?
Yeah, I'm just hoping they do what they've done with Tata Sky on Premier League, which is the red button, which is like the next stage of evolution for telecasting, with Sky and other broadcasters in the UK have done it. Essentially to say that if there are three things happening live, you press the red button and as a viewer, you get to choose what you want to watch. And that could prove useful for a sport like Formula One, which is traditionally, from insiders, the least revenue-making sport for Star Sports in India. So essentially, something like that could be the answer to Vinayak's question, to say that there are four live events, that there is still a way for you to watch what you want to.
And the same goes for the streams and those platforms as well.
My biggest concern is I just don't see them putting in all that effort to make it work. And I mean, given that, you know, a lot of people still use cable in India and not Tata Sky and Airtel and Dish, I don't see that red button becoming a big factor, at least in the near future. So it's a little disappointing in that sense. I mean, it's, make no mistake, I mean, it's a massive deal for Star. I mean, Star is going to make the most of it. Whether it's any, I don't think there's any question over whether it's they're going to end up being happy about getting the IPL deal or not. And it's a big deal for them, and they are going to make the most of it. They're going to promote it, like, you know, every way possible. They're going to probably increase Hotstar subscriptions. That's been mooted. That's already been discussed about. It's in terms of whether it makes sense for Star or not, I don't think there's any question whether it makes sense for fans. That I'm not sure. That I think is the biggest concern over there.
Okay, and we'll take one last word from Clive and then sort of maybe, because we're almost out of time.
Actually, you guys have said everything what you wanted to say, but, you know, the best tweet I think which I saw during this whole IPL media rights thing was from Sampath, where he said it's strange that Star has paid 2 billion plus just to see Rohit Sharma lift the IPL trophy.
So this is...
Come on.
I actually love that.
Clive's wearing 2-3 partisan hats to sign off from this episode.
Okay, and that's about all the time we have this week, because we've had quite a few discussions and covered quite a lot of ground. As far as the Pod of Cricket goes, you can find us on any of the podcasting platforms, or you can follow us on Twitter at Pod of Cricket. You can follow Clive at Vanillawala. You can follow Vinayak at VinayakKM. And you can follow me at Tariq Laskar, TareqLaskar. And you can follow Srinath at, sadly, Srinath Sripath. Srinath's legendary.
Wow. I wish there's some music for this.
This is a very sad note to end the podcast. I don't like this. Today we mourn the death of the River Street.
The commoditization of Twitter handles.
Not cool, man. We're reconsidering your presence on the podcast.
I get it now.
Oh, great. So I thought Vinayak was the only one who
had. Oh, God. I got the handle now.
Man, you've been quite... Yeah. Dude, I mean, I didn't get it too much earlier either. So.
Dude, 3 years.
Literally discussed it on the pod.
Yeah, but I didn't... Now I got it. When he said reverse sweep, that's when I got it. I was like, wow.
And you said longer than test cricket, man. Forget it.
Okay, and on that note of illumination, I think we shall say goodbye for this week. So we'll just go around the table. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, Clive.
Thanks.
Thank you, Vinayak.
Thanks, man.
For joining in after a long shift. And thank you, Srinath.
Thanks to you, Tariq, as well. Yep.
And in the meantime, this is Tariq signing off from Pod of Cricket. See you guys next time.